Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. And those streaming services can be tapped into at any time. Today is June 17th, 2026. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 51,492, the NASDAQ at 26,021, and the S&P at 7,420. Our topic tonight is talking about inheriting retirement accounts. So last week we talked about retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options. And this week we're going to focus on inheriting retirement accounts. We are live. We will take your questions. Cindy and Bob are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can ask still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live, you can give your question to Cindy, and they'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So talking about inheriting retirement accounts, let me start with just some quick basics about retirement accounts so that you understand retirement accounts are saving vehicles. And quite often the goal is to save for retirement. But often these retirement accounts could end up growing, of course, being used for our retirement years. But quite often we find that there are balances that remain at the end of the owner's life, and they typically have named a beneficiary, and the proceeds of that retirement account or the tax attributes of that retirement account pass on to the beneficiary. Rules have changed over the recent years, over the recent tax legislation. So we think it's important to talk about what happens when you inherit, because it is very different. And what further complicates it is, you know, as a planner for many years, we do planning for clients and we may plan for their retirement years. And part of their estate planning may include planning for those retirement accounts to go to eventual beneficiaries, particularly when we talk about Roth IRA accounts, because those are income tax free. Quite often, owners, you know, who may have children or nieces or nephews that they're very close to, are really like to use that as a asset that they can pass on to eventual heirs. And so quite a bit of our planning would be around that. Well, then, you know, you do all this planning, then whoops, you know, new tax legislation comes in and it kind of changes the projection of that planning that we worked so carefully to do. And so sometimes we have to do planning with the information that we have available to us and, you know, go from there and then hopefully be able to pivot or, you know, modify or kind of amend things that we might have done or thought that, you know, we were planning for. So I think it's important to understand retirement accounts, what they're for. Yes, for retirement, but often and quite often, actually an estate planning technique to pass on assets to the next generation or, you know, heirs or even charity. As we know, I like using IRAs for charity in particular. So typically when people are saving for their retirement while they're working, they, if they're employed, they may have a 401k plan offered at work or a 403b. Those are ERISA plans under federal regulations. And as an employee, you can contribute $24,500. If you're over 50, you can do an extra $8,000. And a special rule for people 60 to 63 now, this is new, and it's very, I don't know how they come up with these things. To me, it's strange and it's hard to remember. You can do $11,250. So anyone who's listening who is 60 to 63 this year, if you are someone who already maxes your 401k with the 24.5 and you think your max is $8,000, you actually could do $11,250. And then a note on that, and this could be important as part of that when I say retirement planning, also estate planning, and really income tax planning too. And next week I'm going to talk about the elements of your financial life and how they all work together. It's important to note that for people who made over, I believe, $150,000 in 2025, if you are contributing to a retirement plan and you're maxing it, and you're over 50, your catch-up contribution actually has to be directed to the Roth portion of the employer retirement account. And that could typically, more and more plans did adopt the Roth feature for their 401k plans or 403b plans. For many years, a lot of employers did not adopt it. So you had to make sure that your employer adopted the Roth feature for the 401k or the 403b, assuming they have, or with this new legislation, now they have. Then the catch-up contributions, again, for those people making over $150,000 in 2025 from wages, from that job, from that employer, will be subject to the catch-up contribution going into the Roth if you are maxing up to the catch-up contribution. For people who are under 50, you don't have the catch-up contribution, so it doesn't apply to you. All right? So that's 401ks, 403bs. Those are the amounts, and over time, those accumulate. And they accumulate, obviously, if you're maxing and using or taking advantage of the higher amounts to contribute. That can add up quite quickly and can be sizable. And sometimes we're finding that people retire, whether they keep it in the 401k or they roll it over to an IRA, sometimes they're in the millions of dollars. And we're going to hear as we go through the show about required minimum distributions, for while you're alive, but then what happens when you're gone. And that could have a much more significant impact, which also plays into the planning that we might be doing now. IRAs have a much smaller contribution that you can put in. So we're not seeing IRAs grow as fast as perhaps 401ks, 403bs, or you might have what's called the rollover IRA. That's typically the monies and funds that you've brought over from a retirement plan at work. And that's why the IRA rollovers might look large as well. But quite often when we're just looking at traditional IRAs, they're not very often as large because you're so limited on how much you can put into them, which in 2026 is $7,500. There's certain rules around that. Number one, you have to have earned income. And if you're a participant in a employer plan, you also may be further limited on whether you can put money into a traditional IRA and get a deduction for it. The IRS doesn't care if you do after tax contributions or non-deductible contributions to the IRAs. Doesn't matter if you're participant in a plan. It doesn't, you know, you do have to have wages, but they don't care. You can still always do a non-deductible one as long as you have wages. So the IRAs, we don't see those growing as fast because it's $7,500, much smaller amount. Catch-up contribution is $1,100. That's traditional. Both of what I just talked about were contributions on a pre-tax basis. That's important to our people who are inheriting, how they take it and how you take it in your retirement years. But there's also Roth features, which I'll talk about when we come back from this next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds, a powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax- and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I appreciate that plug from Margaret McConnell, because that is exactly what we talk about on Your Financial Choices, all the different options you have for your financial decisions. And charitable giving has a number of features that you can use, and my favorite way to give is from the IRA when you can, and we'll talk about the options for that as we go through our outline tonight too. So I'm first trying to just set the table for what we have to pay attention to and why it makes a difference what you're doing now while you're alive and, you know, contributing to a retirement account, and how that plays into the decision making when someone is inheriting these retirement accounts. So I just kind of gave some numbers around the IRAs and the 401k contributions. And I mentioned, when I say traditional IRA, when I say 401k and 403b, I'm typically talking about pre-tax contributions. You're getting a tax benefit today, and in the future, you're going to pay income tax on that. There are also after-tax contributions that we make, or contributions to the Roth feature. So years and years ago, people may have been making after-tax contributions into 401ks. So you, if anyone's retired and listening, if you're retired and you're listening and you kept your money at the 401k with your former employer, pull out your statement and look at the makeup of your 401k. And I want you to look for a couple things. One, is there any employer stock in your plan still? If there is, check out the cost basis on it. That could be very informative to you. Look to see if you have after-tax dollars in that 401k, because that's very informative, or if you have any Roth money in that 401k. If you have Roth money in your 401k, when you look at your statement, that Roth money is continuing to grow income tax-free. You made those contributions on an after-tax basis. It's growing income tax-free because that was the new feature of the Roth in a 401k. It's called the designated Roth. If you had old money, because you've been working for a very long time, and maybe back in the day you maxed out, but you wanted to, you know, further contribute to your retirement account, your plan may have allowed you to make after-tax contributions. This was typically before Roth even existed. So you might have had some after-tax money in that 401k. If you look at your statement and you see some after-tax money in there, know that that after-tax money is not going to be taxable when you take it out, but it's also not growing tax-free. Like the Roth is growing tax-free, the after-tax money is not growing tax-free. So you might want to think about, what would it look like if I rolled over this IRA, or excuse me, this 401k to a rollover IRA? Because you can pull the after-tax money out and put it into a Roth. They have not done away with that. They talked about doing away with it, but they did not. So you can still roll after-tax money over into a Roth IRA and get the benefit of the tax-free growth on that then, rather than letting it continue to sit. Now, granted, if it's $2,000 or $3,000, not a big deal, but I've seen much larger sums of money in after-tax portions and 401k, so it's something to look at. If you do have employer stock, be very, very careful. I talk about this from time to time. It's called employer stock has a tax benefit called net unrealized appreciation. One of the reasons I want to mention this here too is because if you pass away and you have employer stock in your 401k, there, that special tax nature that you have on employer stock, the net unrealized appreciation, can pass to your beneficiaries as well. But it's it has to be done very carefully. So I just want to point that out. It's too complicated for my discussion this evening because I do want to eventually get to talking about inheriting these accounts. But these are the little attributes and aspects of your retirement accounts that are going to be important as you're doing your retirement planning and or estate planning. So we've talked about those contributions being pre-tax to IRAs, 401ks, 403bs. We've talked about after-tax dollars going in, whether it's after-tax from like many years ago or now Roth, because we wouldn't really probably be doing too much in after-tax contributions if we have Roth available to us, but we still might have some after-tax contributions going into plans today. And why would that be? Well, if someone is so flush with cash that they have plenty of money, they don't need any more cash flow, and they would really like to further defer tax on investment income that they might have, and their employer allows an after-tax contribution, then that employee may be maxing out their 401k, they may be maxing out their catch-up contribution, and they still could have some extra room within the IRS caps. And if the employer says, yes, you can put after-tax money in, then that employee could actually put more money in the after-tax portion. The cap for 401ks and 403bs, as I mentioned, was $24,500 for 2026 and $8,000 catch up for most of us over 50. You still might be able to do more, and that's where you would do the after tax. But they're not going to let you put that into the Roth if you've already capped out on the overall limit. Okay, so if that makes sense, there's a huge cap. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. It might be like $72,000 between the employer and the employee. And so if the employee's doing 24-5 and the employer's doing some kind of match, there's still a lot of wiggle room in there. So if you've capped out your normal contributions, you still might be able to do some after-tax money. And again, that's important if when you retire, you roll over, you want to roll over the after-tax money to a Roth, or if someone's inheriting and they know nothing about your accounts, you died without being able to do any planning or telling your spouse or your kids what you have in your 401k, and maybe they're not financially savvy, you want to look and see what you got there and make sure that someone knows. You got to be careful when you go to roll these things over. You want to take the after-tax money out and put it into Roth, and if you're inheriting it, you'd roll it over to an inherited Roth IRA. All right, so just you got to watch out for all these little nuances. As things get more complex and complicated, you have to pay attention a tiny bit more. Now, some of the other reasons it's important to kind of understand the groundwork before we talk about inheriting. The whole purpose of you saving is for your retirement. The bonus is if you have heirs and loved ones that you want to pass, or philanthropy, if you want to pass on, you know, that's just gravy for them. You want to make sure you have the money for you during your lifetime, of course. Although I can't tell you how many people come in and say, you know, I want to pass on assets. I want to pass on assets. Totally fine, too. And we can do planning for that. But so during your life, so that you know, as you're saving for your retirement, pre-age 59 and a half, if you are, let's say you've been let go, and let's pretend you're 54 years old, there's no exception to a 10% penalty if you go to take money out of a retirement account pre-age 59 and a half, unless an exception applies, you're going to have a 10% penalty and the income tax. So that could kind of like throw you off. You want to be aware of that. The reason I mention that is because if you were one of the fortunate people who started investing in Roth IRAs, you know, when they first came out, or, you know, maybe perhaps put money into Roth 401ks when that feature first was opened up. The nice thing about Roth is you can take out original contributions tax-free. So you just be aware of that. There are some rules around conversions, which I won't get into right now, but just be aware of how your saving could impact your ability to access that money during your working years and or retirement years. Once you're age 59 and a half, that early withdrawal penalty goes away, and you would just take out a normal distribution and pay income tax on it. All right, after age 59 and a half, no 10% penalty. Pre-age 59 and a half, if it's 401k, you have a, you know, a special rule if you're 55 by the end of the year. I think I talked about that last week. We are at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. That's what we're talking about, financial choices. And we do have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Carolyn, hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Lori.
It's great to hear from you. It's been a while. How's
Lori,
it going?
I can't hear you.
Oops.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Okay, yeah, that's a little better. Hi, I have a CD that's maturing soon,
mm-hmm.
and I'm weighing my options as to what to do with it. It's about $10,000 plus the interest. I've had it in CD and rolled it over a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I can continue doing that, or I could maybe put it in my emergency savings, which is the money that's easy to get at if you have an emergency.
Right.
Set aside this, you know, it'll hold us over for a few months if something drastic happens.
Mm-hmm.
That is okay, but it's taken a little bit of a hit because my husband and I just did a funeral pre-plan, and now we're paying it off in the next few months, so it's going to take a little bit of a hit from that. So I'm wondering if the $10,000, I could put it in with the emergency fund, and then kind of when we recover from that, paying off the prepaid funeral, I could do another CD or something else with it. I don't know. I'm just tossing ideas around.
Well, do you have any interest on that prepaid funeral plan, or you just it was no interest, you're just paying it over a few months?
It was 6 months, same as cash, which is what we'll
okay.
be doing, so no interest.
Okay, so the final payment is due in how many months?
It's due in 6 months from May, so like the end of
November.
October.
Okay. And
early November. It's early November.
Okay,
yes.
And what kind of CD rate can you get on a six-month CD?
I should have looked up before I called. Sorry.
That's okay.
Kind of spur of the
well,
moment.
You might be able to even look at a three-month CD. You know, I would say, Carolyn, if you think it's money that you're going to need in the next 3 to 6 months, you know, if you could do a three-month CD and your cash flow is still okay, you could check that out. I don't know if I would get too fancy with this if you're, as you said, your emergency reserves, which makes you always feel kind of comfortable and can sleep at night, and you can let your other investments work for you, then I would say, you know, keep it. Don't try to get fancy, meaning putting it somewhere to earn more money. It's kind of nice to know that's there. And as you know, your emergency reserves is kind of going down each month to pay for the pre-planned funeral, then I would just use the CD to replenish your cash. If you find that your cash is staying steady and not depleting as fast as you need, as you thought, you know, you could always maybe put it into a six-month CD if you want. The penalty on getting out of the CD, I don't think is always like as terrible as someone might think if you had to get to it. Or you could maybe just put in, you know, do an $8,000 CD if it helps replenish your cash reserve a little bit more. Yeah, I wouldn't get
fancy.
Oh, that's
a good idea.
Yeah.
To redo the CD before a smaller amount and put the rest of it in the emergency fund.
Right.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and if you looked at the difference between what your CD might get versus, you know, a money market from an online banking source, it may not be that different when you check it out. So sometimes just to put it into a, you know, a savings account, an online savings account, might not be that different than the CD rate that you're going to get, and you can access that at any time. So maybe it's time to check that out, too.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I like it. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.
Oh, you are so welcome.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, so that was good because we were talking about, you know, making sure we have an emergency reserve, which is always, always important so that you're not having to pull from your portfolio if the market's down, if you have equities and that kind of thing. So getting back to talking about the retirement accounts. So I'm kind of trying to set the stage for how we're saving for retirement accounts, the different nature, and you have to pay attention to what kinds of retirement accounts you have, whether it's an IRA, a traditional IRA, a rollover IRA, a Roth IRA, 401k, 403b, Roth 401k, Roth 403b, 401k with employer stock and after-tax money in a 401k. Okay, so the nature of all of these, make sure you understand what that is. Then I talked about having a penalty if you take it out too early. Of course, there's always exceptions. The exceptions for IRAs are not always the same as the exception for 401k, so be aware of that. You might have heard someone say, oh, I took money out of my, you know, IRA for education or a home purchase, and there wasn't, you know, a penalty on that. Well, that might not be the rule for the 401k, so be aware that the rules are different. They're different kinds of plans. One is, you know, federal, and one is, you know, governed by the state, but there's different income tax rules on those, different withdrawal rules. So, now, after age 59 and a half, I said there's no penalty. You can take it out without a 10% penalty. Roth conversions, I said, might have a little bit of a different flavor. I'm just going to give a tiny little asterisk on that right now, meaning if you inherit a Roth IRA that is from a Roth conversion, the rules that applied to the owner will also apply to you, meaning if that owner converted from an IRA to a Roth, let's say a year before they died, and now you inherited it, there is a longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half, longer of on conversions to get the earnings out. So that rule would continue to apply to you. So you have to be aware of that. That's just a little asterisk. I'm probably not going to mention it again. Then after we get past age 59 and a half, I said you could take out money when you want. But let's say you don't need it. You're letting it continue to grow. You don't need any cash flow. You just did such a good job with your savings and you have other money and other resources, or you have a pension, or someone has a second job or a part-time job or a later job or whatever it might be. You don't need money, so you let it grow. Well, at some point, the IRS says, hey, you got to pay the tax man. So on 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, rollover IRAs, those I said were all pre-tax, the IRS wants their taxes, and eventually they're going to make you take something out, and that's called the required minimum distribution. The required minimum distribution age has changed over the years. It went from 70 and a half to 72 to 73, and now anyone born 1960 or later, the age is 75. Okay, and the reason I have to mention this is because what the owner's required minimum distribution date is important when someone is inheriting. So if I'm going to inherit an IRA or inherit a 401k, I need to know how old the decedent was, and I need to know what rules applied to them, and I also have to know if they were subject to the required minimum distribution, did they take their required minimum distribution in the year they passed away. That is going to impact what happens to the next level of beneficiaries of that owner's IRA. All right. And we'll talk more about that when I come back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about inheriting retirement accounts. And, you know, I've taken half the show talking about retirement accounts and not actually inheriting them. And I'm waiting for the big drum roll. But it is really important to understand what kind of retirement accounts there are, what you're doing during your lifetime with those retirement accounts. In case you had other intentions for them, you know, for your retirement years or for your passing. So, you know, the planning isn't done when we die. The planning's done before then, and it can have an impact. So we've talked about, you know, the various kinds of accounts. And now I said at some point we have required minimum distributions. And why is it important to know? Is because if I pass away and my, you know, beneficiaries inherit, the rules are different depending on who inherits. But it also has an impact on, you know, what they're going to do with the money kind of immediately. They have to understand a few things. So let me see if I can kind of break this up a little bit. Number one, you're still alive and you hit that milestone age, 73, and in a couple years it's going to be age 75. And you say, well, what is the required minimum distribution? How do I take it? When do I take it? You know, who pays tax on it? What happens? So typically, if you still have a 401k at your former employer, you would have to work with the, you know, the custodian of the, or the, you know, the administrator of the 401k plan to take your required minimum distribution. Sometimes they will alert you to what that is, and sometimes I think they don't. So you would have to do your distribution from that 401k directly. The RMD, the required minimum distribution, is based on your life expectancy and the December 31st balance of the prior year. So let's pretend I'm turning 73 in 2026. Of course, I'm not. I'm young at heart. I am not turning that. But let's pretend I am. So I'm 73 in 2026, and I have to take a required minimum distribution. I have to understand what kind of accounts I have, like I just talked about. So in this story, it's a 401k I kept at a former employer. And I have to take a required minimum distribution. I look at my December 31st balance. I divide it by my life factor, which I think is like 26.5 years. And then you say, hey, you know, 401k, I have to take my distribution. I believe on a 401k, there's a mandatory withholding when we take a distribution of, I think it's, oh golly, 20% or 22%, something like that. So they're going to take a mandatory withholding on that 401k distribution, and then you get the check. And you've satisfied that required minimum distribution. Now, if you didn't look to see what was in that 401k, then typically what might happen is they may just kind of pro rata liquidate funds to generate the cash to pay out that required minimum distribution. You may be able to go in and say, take it from this account or this fund. Maybe you have some money market in there or stable value fund or something like that. You may be able to identify that. So just think about that. But if you have that employer stock, you're not going to get any tax benefit from that employer stock as long as it's still in the plan. To get the tax benefit I was talking about, the net unrealized appreciation, which in a 100% withdrawal, you have the employer stock go into a brokerage account and you pay tax on the cost basis, ordinary income on the cost basis. The difference to the fair market value is long-term capital gains, subject to special rules. So just be careful with that. Okay, so you do that. But then you say, oh, wait, I have a rollover IRA over here, you know, somewhere else, and I have to take a required minimum distribution from that too. You can't commingle IRAs with 401ks as far as where you're going to get the money from. 401ks stand alone. if I have five different IRAs, individual IRAs, or individual rollover IRAs, all in my name, I'm the owner, and I have five different ones, I could take my required minimum distribution for the total of all of them out of one, out of two, out of three. I can allocate it evenly. I can do it however I want. The IRS looks at IRAs all as one. So they don't care where you take it out as long as you take out the right amount. Okay, so that's IRAs. Roth IRAs have no required minimum distribution while you're alive. No required minimum distribution while you're alive. So the 401k has one, the IRA has one, the IRA rollover has one. The Roth IRA has no required minimum distribution. You have to take out the required minimum distribution at the required beginning date. The IRS gives you till April 1st of the first year to of the first time you have to take it. They give you till April 1st of the next year to do it. A lot of people will say to me, well, why don't I just wait? I can wait till April 1st. Well, then in that next year, if you wait, you're going to have two required minimum distributions. And that could really, you know, hit your income pretty hard if you have to take two in 1 year. So that might make sense if you're in a super high tax bracket. Let's say you retired in December and you were making, you know, $1 million. Well, maybe I don't want to take my required minimum distribution in that year I retired if I'm going to make $1 million and I also turn 73. I might wait till the next year. But typically, I have people take the required minimum distribution in the year they hit that age. And some people think you have to wait until you actually are 73. You don't. It can be any time of the year that you can do that. If you turn 73, even on December 31st, you have to take it. You can take it any time during the year. If you turn 73 on January 1st, you don't have to take it January 1st. You can wait till, you know, the end of the year, as long as you take it out. So those are those rules. Now, what happens if I inherit? Well, if I'm going to inherit, it all depends on who the beneficiary is. And, you know, I'm going to assume for our little story here right now that the beneficiaries are people. I'll give you a quick little note then. So a beneficiary of your IRA could be charity. And it could be a percent to charity. It could be the whole thing to charity. I love using IRAs for charitable giving at death. That way you know that you had the money you needed during your lifetime. And when you may not need it anymore and you're gone, it could make sense to give charity, nonprofits, 501c3s, your IRA, because it's income taxable to any individual who would be getting it. Whereas to charity, they don't pay income tax. So that's a great vehicle for that. You can do it by account. Maybe you say, I want $50,000, and maybe your IRA is $1 million. Well, you could have just a separate account with $50,000 in it and name the charity the beneficiary of that. All they need is a death certificate, and boom, they get it. It's just like so easy. If you, let's say you have $1 million IRA and you wanted $500,000 to go to charity and $500,000 to go to, you know, nieces and nephews, you can do it that way. You can do 50% to charity and 50% to, you know, ABCDE, nephews, nieces, whatever, or your children. So if you were required minimum distribution age, though, and you did not take your required minimum distribution, your beneficiary is going to have to take it. Now, if you died December 31st and you didn't take your required minimum distribution, I told you you were supposed to, right? But you didn't, because maybe you were sick and you didn't take it. Now you've died and now your beneficiary has to do it. But your beneficiary didn't know, you know, until after the new year that you passed away. And now they would just have to shore that up then. Okay, you're not going to get in trouble for that. Your beneficiary is not going to get in trouble for that. But your beneficiary really needs to be on top of knowing, when do they have to start the required minimum distribution, not just for themselves, but did they make sure that the decedent was whole on their required amount? Okay, but that is the beneficiary who would be responsible for that then. I have had circumstances where the beneficiaries, there was like 20 beneficiaries on an IRA in a case I'm aware of. And the aunt, or it was from an aunt, and the aunt had not taken her required minimum distribution. But there were several of the beneficiaries that said, hey, we're just going to take our whole amount, because when it gets split up that many ways, the distribution wasn't like overly taxably burdensome to them. So several of the beneficiaries took their share outright. And in doing so, that actually covered that required amount that the aunt had had. So the other beneficiaries didn't have to take the required amount for what aunt missed, because at least some of them did. So it was met. The requirement was met. All right. But then by the next year, the surviving beneficiaries had to take a regular required minimum distribution, because aunt was required minimum distribution age. So if the owner of the account passes away and passes on that asset, if they were subject to required minimum distributions, and I'm talking about non-spouses at this point inheriting, those non-spouse beneficiaries typically are going to have a required minimum distribution unless certain exceptions apply. So really important to know who is the beneficiary. So that's what you should start with, identifying the type of beneficiary. If it's a spouse, if a spouse is inheriting, they have a lot of different options and probably the most flexibility. So typically, if we have spouses who are about the same age and the surviving spouse is going to inherit the deceased spouse's IRA or 401k, whatever it might be, they can make it their own. So let's pretend husband passes away. He was required minimum distribution age. Then we have the spouse, and she didn't really have too much in retirement accounts. She raised the kids, whatever it might be. She's now inheriting husband's. They were about the same age. Now she inherits his. She makes those her own. Now she is the beneficiary. She's not the beneficiary anymore. She's the owner now. And now the required minimum distributions are based on her life expectancy. So she's RMD age in my story. She just starts to take the required minimum distributions over her life expectancy. All right. And then she can make it her own. She can name her own beneficiaries, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if she passes away, and let's pretend they have children, because I said she stayed home and took care of the kids. Now she passes it on to her children and they inherit. And let's pretend, you know, there was two of them and the account's worth $1 million. Now mom passes away. The two kids are beneficiaries. Now the kids are not the owners. They're inheriting from the owner. They are beneficiaries. And typically, you're going to roll over that IRA that you inherited to what we call an inherited IRA. If you take out if you just take a withdrawal on it, it's all income taxable. In my story, these are the pre-tax dollar retirement accounts. Then it's all going to become income taxable. But instead, you roll it over into inherited IRA. I always, you know, suggest to people, unless it's really a tiny amount, you have the most options by rolling it into the inherited IRA. So this is at the next level, not the spouse, not the individual owner beneficiary, not the spouse taking it over. Now I'm talking about the beneficiaries who take it over from, you know, the deceased. It's inherited. That if you roll it over into an inherited IRA, you have the most kind of options. You're not subject to the tax all at once. And the options you have aren't what they used to be. Before, we could take out required minimum distributions over our single life expectancy, which if I inherited it, now I'm going to pretend I'm 45. My life expectancy might have been, you know, 45 years. Now we have to take it out within 10 years. There's some other rules around that, depending on how old you are and if you have some other underlying exceptions that might qualify. So when we come back, I'll try to give you like a little summary so that you can kind of get some instincts around this and understand the implications of inheriting retirement accounts and why it would make a difference in the kind of accounts that you're inheriting. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Okay, welcome back. I'll see if I can run this down for you fairly quickly. So let me go back for a moment to spousal beneficiaries. So as a spouse, if I'm inheriting, I do have some options. What are my options? I told you one of the examples was same age spouses, both RMD age already. Spouse can make it her own. She can take it out over her own life expectancy. What if the spouse is 54 years old? Remember I told you earlier there's a 10% penalty on an early withdrawal if it's pre-age 59 and a half. Well, we do have some people who pass away and leave a spouse younger than themselves. And if I'm 54, if I make that IRA my own, I would have an early withdrawal penalty of 10% because I'm not 59 and a half because now I'm the owner of that. So maybe I don't want to be the owner of that. Maybe I don't want to make it my own. And instead, I could keep it as an inherited IRA because guess what? One of the exceptions to the 10% penalty is inherited IRA. So if I take money out of an inherited IRA, there is no 10% penalty. That is an exception. So if I'm pre-age 59 and a half and I'm a surviving spouse, I might want to have a leave it as an inherited IRA and then, take it out over the rules that would apply then. Here's another option. I had a case where I had a spouse who passed away, was much younger, was not required minimum distribution age, but my surviving spouse was required minimum distribution age. And the surviving spouse had huge RMDs, really big tax hits. And the wife who passed away pre-required minimum distribution age had very large retirement accounts as well. If he made those retirement accounts his own, then his required minimum distribution on his IRAs that he now would own was going to more than double, and he was already in a very high tax bracket. So we said leave it as an inherited IRA. And one of the rules for that spouse then was he would not have had to start the required minimum distributions on that inherited IRA until the deceased spouse would have reached her required minimum distribution age, which was several years. Subsequently, he passed away before that RMD was ever triggered on hers. So, while he was alive, we saved a lot of taxes because otherwise it would have, really hit him. And in the end, all those IRAs were going to charity anyway. So it kind of worked out. Coincidentally, it worked out. All right. So spouses have a little bit more flexibility. There is something now when they changed the rules on beneficiaries, and I think it was Secure Act 2.0, they now have something called eligible designated beneficiaries. And these individuals get special treatment. They can still stretch the distributions a little bit differently than this 10-year rule. I told you if I'm a non-spouse beneficiary, typically the rule is I have to take it out within 10 years. Well, there's certain special treatment on eligible designated beneficiaries, and those include a minor child of the account owner. So if my child inherits and they're 2 years old, they don't have to take it out by the time they're age 12. They would have until the age of majority, and then they have the 10 years. So the 10-year rule starts when they reach the age of majority. If there's a disability or a chronically ill individual, different stretch treatment on that. If a person who's inheriting is less than 10 years younger than the decedent, then they can do it over their life expectancy. So you want to watch out for those kind of special exceptions. So, for example, this stuff can get so complicated that even professionals, may not even grasp all these rules until they're kind of in front of them or you have to, you know, investigate them, because you sometimes you don't see this. So, for example, if I named my niece as a beneficiary of my retirement account and I was required minimum distribution age, and maybe my niece is 10, I'm making this all up, then you might think, oh, well, the niece isn't the age of majority. She has, you know, she has to wait till she's the age of majority and then 10 years. That rule is for the eligible designated beneficiaries, which include a minor child of the account owner. It didn't say anything about nieces or nephew minor children, okay? So there could be that 10-year rule on those situations. So don't get, you know, hung out to dry on things you might not understand. So for the most part, most people that are non-spouse beneficiaries, it was the Secure Act of 2019 actually that changed this. They must withdraw the entire account within 10 years and no lifetime stretch would be allowed. What you have to understand is, though, if the original, this is when the original owner was subject to required minimum distributions, they have to take it out. The beneficiary has to take it out each year. There's a minimum amount they have to take out. Here's the part that's so confusing, though. It's hard to understand all this. If the owner was required minimum distribution age, and now I as a non-spouse beneficiary and I as a non-eligible designated beneficiary, I know I have to take it out with 10 years. I actually get to use my life expectancy. But wait, you told me you have to take it out within 10 years. Yeah, my life expectancy for the first 9 years at a minimum, but then the balance in year by year 10. So I have to do, at a minimum, my life expectancy, not the decedent's life expectancy, my life expectancy, but then I have to have the whole thing out in 10 years. So this is where you want to be careful, because maybe if it's $1 million IRA, maybe I'm really young and my, you know, required minimum might be $2,000. And then by year 10, I have to take out $1 million. You got to be very careful and watch for that. Maybe you need to, you know, smooth it out a little bit, because you can always take out more. You can always take out more. There's just a minimum amount that is required. But for those IRAs, it all has to come out within 10 years. Now, if you were paying attention at the beginning of the show and why all this actually meant something when I was talking about it, you heard me say there is no required minimum distribution on a Roth. Well, what happens under this Secure Act with the Roth? There is no required minimum distribution. If there had been one, I told you someone has to take out a minimum amount each year. Well, there is no required minimum distribution on the Roth. So if I'm a beneficiary, a non-spouse beneficiary, et cetera, inheriting, I have to take out that Roth within 10 years, but I don't have to take out any minimum amount or during the 10 years. So remember, the Roths are growing income tax-free, and wouldn't I really want that to grow income tax-free as long as I can? That would be the last money I would touch, okay? I mean, unless you got big credit card bills and lots of debt. I mean, otherwise, if you've got enough money for everything else, let the Roth inherited IRA run, which is why it's also critical that if you do inherit a Roth, that you set it up properly. You cannot make it your own if you're inheriting it and you're a non-spouse. You have to set it up as an inherited IRA. And typically what you're hoping to see is deceased name, inherited IRA for the benefit of me, you know, for benefit of me, the beneficiary. So, you know, mom and dad, inherited IRA for the benefit of child. All right. Now, we might have beneficiaries who are not people, who are not spouses, who are not eligible designated beneficiaries. You could have beneficiaries who are estates. I hate seeing that, by the way. I hate seeing estates as beneficiaries on retirement accounts. Retirement accounts are the easiest things to pass on to other people and or charity with beneficiary designations. When you name the estate, it becomes a probate asset. It has to go through the will. It complicates it. It holds it up. And guess what happens? If you name the estate of the beneficiary, unless there's, you know, really particular kind of language provided in estate documents, there's a 5-year payout. It's not the 10-year. It could be the 5-year payout. Now, there is an exception to this. If the decedent named their estate as the beneficiary of an IRA and they were required minimum distribution age, the estate has the ability to continue that schedule. So if the beneficiary died, they were required minimum distribution at 75 and their life expectancy, you know, was like 20 at that point, the estate could continue to take the required minimum distribution over that decedent's required schedule. But how often does anyone want to keep an estate open that long? Usually the beneficiaries want their money. You don't, you know, legal fees, accounting fees, all kinds of stuff. Usually you try to get that done. So this is why I really don't like seeing estates named as beneficiaries, because it just complicates it. I mentioned charities could be a beneficiary of the IRAs or 401ks. That's great. That's easy. I love that. I'd rather see a charity getting IRA money than a percentage of the estate. That complicates it when you name charities in the will. It complicates it with, you know, attorney generals getting involved and, you know, having to go through hoops. It's nice and clean when it's inheriting from retirement accounts directly. So be aware of what kind of account you have. Is it pre-tax? Is it after-tax? You know, meaning pre-tax like 401k, 403b, IRAs, traditional IRAs, rollover IRAs, or post-tax, like after-tax money, Roth IRAs, Roth 401k, Roth 403b, different rules apply to them. Then say, okay, who are my beneficiaries? How are they getting treated? Will my beneficiaries understand what their options are when they're faced with this? If you have a complicated situation, you're aware of it, you've learned about it on the radio, and you have an executor or a power of attorney or someone, a trusted advisor, could be your children if they're the ones inheriting, make sure they understand, you know, what might be the underlying facets of your retirement accounts, particularly if you still have a 401k with perhaps employer stock in it, ESOPs, or, you know, net unrealized appreciation, after-tax money, or Roth money. Make sure they understand. If you roll over a 401k without separating out the after-tax money or the employer stock, number one, if you roll over the employer stock, you lose all the tax benefits on that. If you roll over the after-tax money to an IRA, now you have basis in your IRA, and it's a never-ending calculation of how much is taxable and how much is not taxable. The Roth IRAs give your beneficiaries and yourself while you're retired some options and, you know, taking out some tax-free funds if needed. Just watch out for that. Let me see what else would be important for you to do. Oh, if you've named a trust, trust beneficiaries can be very complicated, and some of the rules have changed on the kinds of trust we have or use. So if perhaps you've named a trust a beneficiary of a retirement account, perhaps you have a special needs child, perhaps you have a child who, you know, has a spending problem, perhaps you have a child who has a substance abuse, and, you know, you're hoping that they're going to get better, and they really might, and that would be great, and they could eventually inherit it. But if you have retirement accounts going into a trust, it's critical that you work with an attorney, that they put the proper language in that trust, because the IRS has to see through that trust to an individual to be able to do the life expectancy factors over that individual's life. It still might have that 10-year payout, but you could spread it out a little longer rather than the 5-year rule applying. You could have the 10-year rule apply, but there's very specific language in the estate documents that you would need to have, all right? So those are just some things to think about. You know, as I always say, this is an educational show. We can't cover everything, and your financial life is as unique as your thumbprint. Your circumstances and situations are unique to you, and it's important to, you know, work with someone who can help guide you and understand all the nuances of what you have, and not just the nuances of what you have, but what you want to do with what you have. Considering, you know, spousal options, children options, relative options, friend options, and charitable giving. Lots of options available to you, and just make sure you understand them and are aware. Next week, I'm going to talk about the elements of financial planning, the importance of coordinating those. So I hope you're able to join us. Thank you, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Bridger. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Carolyn, for calling in. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.